Hey Siri, play Social Geek Radio.
Okay, Social Geek Radio podcast coming up.
Hello geeks, this is Social Geek Radio. I'm Jack Munson, your host and social media consigliere. Today's episode is brought to you by Social Joey and Gusto. Gusto offers modern, easy payroll and benefits to small businesses across the country. They were even named Best Online Payroll by PC Mag. Details on getting 3 months free when you run your first payroll coming up in just a few minutes, or you can check them out now at gusto.com/SGR. Okay, geeks, today's guest is Mike McFall, co-CEO of Big B Coffee. If you're not familiar with Big B, you soon will be. They've got 250-plus locations, and they're growing rapidly. Mike has written a new guide to starting a business called Grind, a no-bullshit approach to take your business from concept to cash flow. The book is out today, and Mike McFall joins us right now on Social Geek Radio. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Jack. How are you?
I am doing well. Welcome. Thanks for being on today, and congrats on the new book.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you. And it's a big day for me. This is the first day of our annual meeting with all of our owner-operators here in Novi, Michigan. And it just so happens that it's the day that my book launched as well. So it's an exciting day for me.
Yeah, going to be a great day. How long has this book been in the works?
Well, I mean, as I've heard some people say, your first book takes a long time if you ever get it done. And that's true for me, right? So this book's been germinating for probably 7-8 years. I've been actively working on it for probably 3 to 4. So it took a long time. It took a long time to get done.
So let's talk a little bit about your background. What's your story?
Well, I'm a Michigan kid. I grew up here. I'll date myself here, but think of on Golden Pond, and if you remember that movie back in the day, and that was my upbringing. I lived on a small lake with, no motors, so we were paddling canoes and we were sailing and catching frogs, and that's how I grew up. It's a small town, but not too far from Metro Detroit or Detroit. So, we were able to be involved in the communities there. But, so my dad was an entrepreneur. My mother was a professor at Michigan State University. And so, I got to live two different worlds, really. I got to live in entrepreneurship and startup with my dad, and then I got to live inside of academia, through my mom's profession. And so I got to see both sides of it. And I think that's one of the reasons why I was so interested in writing a book, is because I watched my mom all those years teaching and writing and seeing the impact it had on people and how powerful that was. And then I also obviously got to be involved with my dad too. So that was my early years. I graduated from Milford High School. I did take one sort of extraordinary trip when I was in my junior year, my third year of high school. And that was, I sailed halfway around the world on a square rig tall ship called the Pegoria. Wow. It was a Canadian program. Yeah, it was, so that was a real eye-opening experience. But one of the things that it did for me is part of the school superintendent agreeing to allowing me to do that was I had to come back and I had to go on a speaking engagement at all the different elementary, middle schools and high schools in the school district. And so I had to come back and I had to put that all together inside of a presentation. And it was a pretty powerful experience to A, go on the trip, but then B, to come back and communicate how important it was. I did that. I graduated. I went to Kalamazoo College. I studied in West Africa in Sierra Leone for 6 months. Again, my third year, my junior year of college. And got a degree in economics and business. And frankly, I was really on my way back to academia when my path crossed with Big B. And so I was working on a research project at the University of Michigan State in East Lansing with a colleague of my mother's. And just, you know, as a, I was only working 20 hours a week. And so I went around and I applied at all the different coffee shops in East Lansing and walked into the first Big B coffee store and applied. Where I, what I was doing at the university was that I was preparing myself to apply to go back to graduate school, and, you know, research such a big part of that world. And so I was on this really cool research project. And so those two worlds collided in East Lansing, and I took the job originally with Big B as a minimum wage barista in the first location, opening the store at 6 a.m. and working until 2 p.m. And then I would leave the store at 2 p.m., walk over to the university. I'd work from 2:30 till 6:30 on that project, and then I would head home. And so, but eventually what happened was my current business partner, Bob Fish, he had an original founder of the company, Mary Roselle. Mary asked Bob to interview me become a manager at their second store. And so it's now in Big B lore anyway, it's become a bit of a story, which is it's called The Walk. And so Bob sat down to interview me to become a manager. And, you know, you're familiar with the Midwest, and, you know, there's always that day in the spring where it's that first day of spring where you can actually smell dirt and the flowers and so on. And it was that day in March of 1996. And so he and I were sitting in the coffee shop about to have an interview, and we ended up getting up and going for a walk that lasted about 4.5 hours. at the end of that walk, we shook hands and agreed to start a company that would be the entity that we would use to grow the brand, Big B Coffee. And you have to remember, when we were doing this, there was one store, and we were standing in the parking lot of that one store. And so we shook hands, we agreed, became the assistant manager of that first store in preparation to become the general manager of the second store that we were working on. And then that's the company that we all work for and are growing today, Global Orange Development, which is the franchisor of Big B Coffee.
So let me ask you about that. Where along the line did you and Bob decide to franchise the business and not just own all of the locations and grow in that method?
Yeah. So that's an interesting part of our history, because there's two pieces to that. The first was we hadn't decided on franchising when we set up our entity, and we set up our entity in June of 1998. What ended up happening was, throughout 1998, after we opened our second store in downtown Lansing, we started getting phone calls from people interested in franchising. And, you know, as a young startup brand, it didn't take too many of those phone calls before we thought to ourselves, well, I wonder if we should explore this franchising idea.
Sure.
And so we did, right? And we were fortunate to have a woman here in town that had started the franchise Two Men in a Truck. Her name was Mary Ellen Sheets.
Oh, sure.
And so, yeah, she's a legend today, right?
Absolutely.
She wasn't then necessarily, but, and so she was really fortunate. We were really fortunate, sorry, to sit down with her, and she just, you know, basically told us everything. Well, we felt everything we needed to know about franchising. She hooked us up with our attorney, who, you know, was our attorney in 1998, and he's still our attorney today. And so that was how we got into franchising. Is really, it was people inquiring about if it was a franchise. And so, and we were going to do it. Another interesting part of the development of the business was we were going to develop both company-owned stores and franchises. And so we had, at one point, we had nine company-owned units, and we were developing the franchise. And we ended up meeting and becoming friends with Fred DeLuca from the Subway Corporation.
Sure.
And he became an integral part of our history. And, you know, we were trying to put together an arrangement where he was going to make an equity investment in our company. And, you know, we were excited about that. And it was – but in one of his visits as was his way, he was able to cut through and, you know, in the end, he made the statement of, you know, you guys aren't very good at operating company owned stores, and you're not very good at franchising. I think you should. I think you should pick one or the other.
Right.
And so
get good at one.
You know, at that. Yeah, and his language was a little more colorful, but I won't use that language. But you know, basically his point was, you know, you guys are it's in his mind, because Subway was always 100% franchise, and so you know his mindset was it's a different business model. Franchising is a different business model. You're servicing a different customer than you are at the retail store level, and you want to focus in on that. And so we did. We sold our 9 stores, and we became, you know, 100% focused on supporting owner operators and building their businesses utilizing the Big B Coffee franchise model.
It sounds like that was some great advice, and it sounds like you and Bob really got off the ground getting some good advice from people like Mary Ellen Sheets and Fred DeLuca. And it kind of feels like that's what you're doing with this book. Book really reads like you're, you know, sitting down across the table at a coffee shop, giving advice on how someone should start a business. Do you see that?
Well, so I don't say sitting down at a coffee shop. Maybe I should have based on my business, but I said sitting at my picnic table in my backyard over a beer.
Oh, that's right? Even better. That's even better.
That was the mindset I had in writing the book. And, you know, there aren't that many people in the world that you'll sit down with and really give them your truth, right? Your real opinions. And those people are your best friends and your family and so on. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to write a book that was that conversation. If I was going to be sitting down with one of my closest friends about business startup, what would I say to them? And that was the idea. And so I wanted the book to be very conversational. I wanted the book to bring some pretty simple, but I think powerful truths to the table when you're in the phase of deciding about a startup.
Yeah, the chapters really read like pillars of starting a small business, you know, doing your due diligence and selling more and just kind of going through the process without too much, how should I say this, too much pomp and circumstance of, you know, how great it is to be an entrepreneur. I think we see far too much of that in the business world and across social media these days. So I like that you're talking about things like cash flow very early in the process. There's a ton of how to run your own business books out there that never speak to that at all.
The concept behind the book was that, you know, Jack, I'm just a normal guy, right? I had, you know, most business books have been written by these ultra successful entrepreneurs who are looking back at business startup through rose colored glasses. And I wanted to write a book on startup when I was still in it and close enough to it that it was real. And so I hopefully brought some things to the table that can bring value. And that first chapter is really about, you know, people spend a ton of time on due diligence. They study things like the marketplace, and they study population densities and incomes, or they study, you know, all kinds of different demographics or whatever it might be in relation to your specific business.
Yeah.
But people don't spend time doing due diligence on themselves. And that's really what the first chapter is about, is I don't believe there is a prototypical entrepreneur. And you'll find that out there in the world, that people try to find, you know, what is the prototypical entrepreneur? I don't think that exists. I think what smart people do is smart people spend time thinking about their own weaknesses, their own strengths, and then they work on trying to figure out how to supplement their weaknesses and take advantage of their own strengths. And that's, that first chapter to me is a piece of entrepreneurship that I don't find a lot of people talking about. And that's really the self-awareness of the entrepreneur and how important, and we're getting into this these days, you know, the EQ, you aren't the most important ingredient of your business, but your own self-awareness is. And so that's chapter one. Chapter two is really, you know, it's in many ways, it's about sales, But I read this book by his name is Amar Bide. He was a professor at Harvard. I think he's at the University of Chicago now. And he studied the Inc. 500 fastest growing private companies. He studied that over 20 years. And 85% of the CEOs of those companies said that they were the primary or only salesperson at startup. And my point there is if you don't consider yourself a salesperson, if that isn't your skill, I believe you're going to struggle in startup. You got to be focused on generating revenue. And so those are two nuggets, right? And then there are chapters 3, 4, and 5. But those are two of the chapter 1 and chapter 2, just to land a couple of the ideas out of the book there.
I like the idea that the CEOs, the founders, whoever is really sort of with the brand from the start, those people have to be the salespeople, because
right.
if no one is following you, and I don't mean salesperson in the character that we think of, like the guy out on a used car lot trying to get somebody to buy
right.
a car. I mean the one who's really driving everyone forward, and everyone around them is following that person. And if you don't have that, and along the way, if you can't make some revenue, you're not going to get very far.
Right.
I mean,
it's pretty simple stuff.
Yeah. You just got a real expensive hobby in that case. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and I think that, another premise that I land is that the salespeople are the most important people in the business. And there's all kinds of different theories on this, but my opinion is if you don't have people generating the revenue, none of the other stuff matters.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got a nice nonprofit in that case. I totally get
right.
that. Something else in the sales area of this book that really jumped out at me is your idea of simplifying and keeping a focus on, I don't know if you refer to it as like the core business or whatever your core products are, and that too many brands are really getting watered down with all of these other bolt-on
yeah.
products and things like that.
Yeah.
As I was reading that, I was thinking, yeah, we now live in a world where Burger King is selling tacos and Taco Bell
right.
is selling French fries. What is going on here? Why does that just not work anymore?
Well, so I think it works once you've reached a level of maturity and stability with your brand. I think at that point, you can start to experiment with different products, and you can start to, look at different avenues and ways to generate revenue. But my point is that in startup, in that particular moment, when you're fledgling, and you're at the very beginning, you got to be able to communicate exactly what you are to the consumer. And it takes an enormous amount of focus to do that. And if you can't, and you'll hear all the time, you hear people talking about pivoting and changing and so on. And I get that. And I understand that that can be necessary at times, but you have to be completely dedicated to your core product and making sure that your core product is improving and getting better and so on. And if in the end you can't sell enough of your core product, then you have to make a tough decision. I mean, maybe you pivot, or maybe you just shut it down and move on to your next venture. But the focus is what is so critically important. And I'll just give you a quick story.
Please.
A friend of mine invested in a pizza shop. A friend of his from high school had been a general manager of a pizza shop for 20 years. He wanted his own place. My buddy was in a position to be able to invest in that. And so he did. And it came out of the gates and it was pretty flat. He was about, 2 years into this pizza shop opening. He was still putting money in it to keep it afloat. And they were really struggling. And so my friend called me up and he said, "Hey, listen, I got an idea. Our building's pretty big. I want to take, 1200 square feet at the front of it. And I want to put a Big B in there. And, we're going to help, offset our losses that way." And, I replied with, "It's not going to work. And I'm not interested in doing it."
Yeah.
And there was a long silence at the other end of the phone. And he said, "I thought you'd be excited about this." And I'm like, "So this guy who's been in the pizza business for 20 years can't figure out how to sell pizzas. And you're going to double down and make his life infinitely more complex by having him learn how to figure out how to sell cups of coffee. And you think that's the solution to your problem. Mm-hmm. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
This guy either figures out how to sell pizzas, or you guys have to shut it down and move on. And so, but focus. And whenever anybody ever, because I get asked the question when I speak in front of groups and students and so on, it's like, so what do you attribute you and Bob's ability, your guys' ability to get the company to where it is today? And it's one word, it's focus. And Bob and I have been waking up every single day for 25 years trying to figure out how to sell one more cup of coffee today. And that's nice. It.
Oh, I love that. I love that idea.
We haven't done anything else.
And your friend with the pizza / coffee shop, it kind of goes back to that original advice you got from Fred DeLuca about you guys do two things quite poorly. So focus on one and learn how to do it well, right?
Yeah. And that's, I mean, it's fundamental, but I watch a lot of people try to get through the startup phase by, you use the term bolting on different levels of complexity. And all that does is take you away from your core product and trying to figure out how to sell your core product.
Yeah. Yeah. We see it all the time in franchising where there's someone says, hey, you know, why don't we partner up on this? Right. Why don't we add in, this marketing service, and then also we're going to bring in another partner and we can sell lottery tickets at the front counter. How about that? Isn't that, and all you're doing is just watering down your brand till somebody says, what do you people do? And you have no answer for it.
Yeah. And we see that all the time in co-branding situations. Those are really complicated to get right.
Yeah. Yeah. Last question I had for you, you have a very wild and crazy goal that you talk about in the book, and it involves a hockey team. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, so I was probably 22 or 23 years old, and I had an opportunity to apply to be the stick boy for the Red Wings.
Wow.
And yeah, so I was all happy. I thought this was going to be a cool opportunity. And I told my dad about this opportunity, and he looked at me and he said, "The stick boy, you should own the Red Wings," and walked away. And you know, we got a chuckle out of that, and because I was 22 years old and you know, didn't have two nickels to rub together. But so ever since then, I'll tell anybody who listened that my biggest goal, professional goal in life, is to own the Detroit Red Wings. And I've been pretty public about it. And now, as of this week, I'm really public because, the Detroit Free Press ran an article, here in Metro Detroit with that being the cover, on the cover of the paper, was the CEO of Bigby Coffee is, plans on owning the Red Wings. And so, but that's always been my beacon, my big goal. Right. So, I read Ted Turner's book from CNN, and he said the biggest mistake people make is they don't set large enough goals. And so I've set that as my big goal. Right. And it's a big one. And, you know, do I think there's a good chance that I'll get there? You know, probably not. I would say the odds are stacked against me, but I think I'm still slightly in the game, which, you know, is impressive in and of itself.
Yes, someone has to own them in the future, right? They're going to be sold to somebody, so why not you?
There you go.
I love that. And having a goal way out there, a nice stretch goal, I think that's an excellent one. And I'd encourage everybody to think about what their own stretch goal is. And you can't think it's any bigger than owning an NHL team. So that's a nice precedence to set. We'll be back in just a moment with a wrap-up of today's interview with Mike McFaul. But first, this episode of Social Geek is brought to you by Gusto. If you have a business or know someone who does, you probably know that small business owners wear a lot of hats. Some of those hats are great, but some, like filing taxes and running payroll, are not so great. That's where Gusto comes in. Gusto makes payroll, taxes, and HR actually easy for small businesses. Fast, simple payroll processing, benefits, and simple management tools all in one place. Gusto automatically pays your federal, state, and local taxes, so you don't have to worry about it. Plus, they make it easy to add on health benefits and even 401ks for your team. Those old school clunky payroll providers just weren't built for the way modern small businesses work. But Gusto is. So let them wear one of your many hats. You've got better things to do. Social Geek listeners get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. Try a demo and see for yourself at gusto.com/SGR. That's gusto.com/SGR. Mike McFaul, the new book is A No Bullshit Approach to Take Your Business from Concept to Cash Flow. It's called Grind. Where can listeners find out more about Grind? Where can they find out more about Bigby? And where can they connect with you?
Sure. So we put a website together, grindthebook.com. That's for this specific book. The website for my business is bigby.com, and so those are the main pages. But for me, if someone wants to reach out to me and has questions or wants to engage, I would say that the best ways, other than the standard ways, right? So of course LinkedIn and all of that. But I think I would invite people to touch base with me on my cell phone, which is 517-388-1444. And my email is mike@bigby.com. Just take note, if you're going to take the email route, you got to give me a couple of days on that one.
Okay.
My time isn't great.
Well, bold move throwing your cell phone number out there. And I would encourage everybody to take advantage of it. You've now got the cell phone number of the co-CEO of Bigby Coffee. So let's hit him up and get some good advice. One final note here, folks. The Marketing Innovation Technology Conference from the IFA, MITCON, is happening in Austin, Texas, October 23rd, 24th, and 25th. I will be your master of ceremonies once again. And you can register and find out more at franchise.org. Mike, thanks for joining Social Geek Radio today. It's been a pleasure, and good luck with the book.
Thanks, Jack. You've been great. I appreciate it.
And thanks to everyone for listening to Social Geek Radio. Copyright 2019, Social Geek Enterprises, Inc.